So how do we, as people of faith, reconcile these realities? The profound good, the strength, the tenacity, the compassion and love that can flow from all of our faiths, operating alongside those who seek to hijack religious for their own murderous ends. Humanity has been grappling with these questions throughout human history. And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. In our home country, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified in the name of Christ.
There will be no quiz. So, well, you know, when Stan asked me to do that, it's kind of like, I don't know. But I thought it was a great opportunity because, for me, teaching history is all about the truth. And if you only saw what I saw in textbooks, that are big fat lies, simply because of people's political or other agendas to get their version of the story out. And this is just another example where during the Crusades, equating what happened in the Crusades with what the Islamic State or ISIS is doing right now in the Middle East, in Syria and Iraq, and what their goals are. So this is right up my alley because I like dispelling the myths or the outright lies and bringing about the truth. So go ahead and hit the next slide. So just to give you a little bit of background information about the Crusades themselves. They lasted between about 1296 and 1291. If you guys are familiar with people like John, Robin Hood, the Sheriff of Nottingham, in that time period. So these men, in one case women, went over to the Holy Land. But what was the reason for doing it? It says in 636 the Byzantines lost control of Palestine to the Muslims. Muhammad had died. He had found his religion about 622, and had ruled for about 10 years, and then he passed away. And at that moment, The Muslims decided to go on a conquest to spread Islam and to create a caliphate, to expand and create a religious empire. And in 636, the Holy Land fell. It was in the hands of the Byzantines, or the Eastern Roman Empire. And in 1271, it's a kind of a key event that happens that will bring the Christians and the Muslims into conflict. And it's the Battle of Manzikert, where the Byzantines had lost basically the eastern half of their empire to the Muslims. And of course, up to this point in time, Christians had been going to the Holy Land since Constantine's time, since about the 300s, going on pilgrimages to visit all the holy sites, to visit the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and so forth and so on. And at various times, the Muslims had cut that off. And other times, the Muslims had allowed the Christians to go ahead and go back to the Holy Land and to visit the holy sites and worship. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre had been burnt down, and a Muslim sultan had it rebuilt. So there was a kind of a history of some tolerance there at the time. But the Battle of Manzikert put the Seljuk Turks right on the back door of the Byzantine Empire and was a real threat to overthrowing the empire and taking more land. And what the guy you're looking at there is Alexios I. He's the Byzantine emperor, and he requests military help in 1095 in order to keep the Turks from overrunning the rest of his empire. And he has no place else to turn but to the western part of the old Roman Empire. France, Great Britain, Spain, Italy, those places. They had the wealth and military power to help him out. Now, at the same time, you got to realize that the church has split since then. You have the Eastern Church and the Western Church. And so Christianity has already split once. And he is in control of the Eastern Church, what we call today as Orthodox. And then the other half of the church is controlled by Rome, called the Roman Catholic Church. Okay. And when he asked for help, he asked the Pope, because the Pope is kind of the de facto head of the western part of Europe. And the Pope calls the Council of Clermont, where he gets all of the bishops and the leading kings and other nobles together to ask if they would like to go and help out the eastern part of the old Roman Empire. And Pope Urban declares, after he finds out that most people want to do this, he declares Deus vult, which in Latin means God wills it. It's kind of a powerful statement that God is going to be behind this project. Whether or not he is kind of immaterial. They're going to go over. Understand what the whole concept is. It's not necessarily a religious war. It is it is to help out from being overrun by the Muslims, to take Palestine back and provide the Byzantines with territorial security. They're under great threat, and this is a way to get it done, and to restore the practice of Christian pilgrimage to the Holy Land. At this point in time, the pilgrimage for the Christians back to the Holy Land has been stopped. So that's kind of a bonus thrown out to them. If you help, we will be able to restore pilgrimage back to the Holy Land. And so the Pope organizes this, and the leading rulers in Western Europe at the time all agree to it, and the bishops throw in, the Pope throws in, and everyone's enthusiastic about doing this. So now the stage is set, and Western Europe's going to go out and help the Byzantines reclaim their territory. That was Pope Leo in the background, if you didn't know. So here are some basic facts about the Crusades that get left out of the history, especially people that really don't like Christianity. They won't mention these things. The philosophy regarding the Muslims and non-Christians, the Pope made very clear, and so did the leading people of the Crusades, made extraordinarily clear that this was how it's supposed to take place. Muslims and Jews would not be forced to accept Christian baptism. Unlike Islam today and the Islamic State, where they force people to either become Muslim or you get your head chopped off. In this case, Christians that were on crusade were not to force the Jews and the Muslims and other non-Christians into Christianity. That's biblical. Nowhere does Jesus ever say, if these people refuse to convert, chop their head off. Never. And non-Christians were not to be assaulted for having a different faith. So those are two very important distinctions that people that bend the history of the Crusades or outright lie about it never mention to people. The Crusaders weren't there to convert people to Christianity. The Crusaders were there to take the Holy Land back from the Muslims. They weren't there to chop people's heads off for not converting. By the way, if you have any questions while I'm going on, throw up a hand. Otherwise, I'll just drone on. The First Crusade was in 1096 and lasted until 1099. So it was about 3.5 years or so. It established 4 Christian states, Edessa, Antioch, Tripoli, and the Kingdom of Jerusalem. And interestingly enough, it's an integrated society. It included everybody. They didn't say, because, well, this is a Christian state, so you're non-Christian, leave. They allowed everyone who, no matter who they were or what they worshiped, to stay and become part of the society. That's not to say, though, that it wasn't discriminatory. But at this period of time in history, every society was discriminatory. Not against race, but where your station was in life. If you're a noble, you were here. If you were a freeman, you were here. If you were a slave, you were here. And so this was much the same way. You could live anywhere in Europe, and if you had a different faith than Christianity, you were down at the bottom of the social ladder. This was not much different, but they had the right to exist as a Muslim or anybody else. Muslims and Jews worshiped freely. Nothing about going to the mosque and worshiping there or going to a synagogue and worshiping was ever outlawed in these four Christian kingdoms in the Holy Land. Ever. They were all treated with a degree of respect. Now, of course, if you were part of the Christian kingdom and you were a Christian, you enjoyed the benefits of being a Christian. If you were, so if I'm a Christian businessman in the kingdom of Jerusalem, I may not hire Muslims to work in my business. I may not hire Jews to work in my business. But you could find that everywhere. The Second and Third Crusades were used to capture lost lands to the Muslims. After the Christians were successful, the Muslims just didn't sit back and say, well, okay, well, they won. We'll just sit back and just take life as it rolls. They wanted their land back. And so they fought back to get it. The guy in the statue there is Saladin. And if you know Richard the Lionhearted, he fought many battles against Saladin. And just to show you the level of respect and how it has nothing necessarily to do with religion, at one point in time, Richard the Lionheart's horse was disabled, and Saladin stopped the entire battle and went back to his stable and got his finest horse and gave it to Richard for him to finish the battle on. That was the type of respect they had for one another. So it was not about necessarily religion as much as it was about territory. By 1291, the kingdom of Jerusalem came to an end. So the final battles in the Crusades basically came to an end, and the Holy Land went back under Muslim control. There would be several other Crusades, some of them very, very misguided. Several of them to try to get that land back, but all of them failed. There was even a children's crusade where they, you know, by a misguided effort, thought that children, since they're innocent, would be successful. And when they shipped the children over to the coast of Italy to take them to the Holy Land, the children were actually pirated away and sold as slaves. So, not saying that our decision-making process in the Christian world regarding the Crusades was very sound, but the fact of the matter is the Holy Land goes into Muslim hands, and it's basically been like that ever since. So, you know, what do we take away from this for today when people start talking about this sort of thing? It was a military campaign. Was there a religious component to it? Yes. The Christians wanted the Holy Land back. They wanted to reestablish the pilgrimage and worship, Christian worship, back in the Holy Land. That was very attractive for Western Europe. It was to restore land, not to convert people to Christianity. It was never seen as an opportunity for that. The atrocities in a military context. They were killing people to acquire land at the time. Had nothing to do with Christianity. Not Christians slaughtering Muslims because they were not Christian. And Christians practiced tolerance with Jews and Muslims. That's the biggest thing. In fact, at the time, there's a lot of Jews who would practice celebrating Muslim holidays and Muslims who celebrated Jewish holidays. When you get to the city of Jerusalem, it was under, you had Christians there, you had Muslims there, you had Jews there, and they all got along for the most part throughout all of this process. And so the fact of the matter is, when President Obama had mentioned that atrocities were committed in the Holy Land in the name of Christ, and, you know, keeping politics aside, that's a lie. There's the truth. And you don't have to take my word for it. Do your own research. I teach the Crusades twice a year. I love the Crusades. It's kind of a neat time. The awakenings that happened in Europe probably would have been delayed several hundred years had it not been for the Crusades. But the fact of the matter is that there was no killing of Muslims because they were not Christians when the Christians went over there. Never happened. was never part of the program. In fact, part of the program was to be tolerant with the Muslims. Allow them to worship and don't molest them whatsoever just because they were Muslims and were not Christian. So our contrast with what's been taught for political purposes and what the truth is. And this is not one of those things that just goes away once somebody leaves office. These things will keep coming up. This is not an attack on history. It's an attack on Christianity. A lot of people don't like what it is that we stand for. And I'll be honest with you. Christian history throughout the years isn't clean. We've had our problems. We've had our issues. I think probably we've treated each other much worse than we've treated other people. But they equate the Crusades to modern radical Islam. Nowhere even close. The brand of Islam that is spreading around the world today is, and this is probably the key point, it's not tolerant. If you're not Islamic, they have no use for you. I don't know if anybody in here has read the Quran. And people keep saying, oh, it's a religion of peace. It's not a religion of peace. Read the book. Honestly, if you really want to know what it says, they've got English language versions of it. Read it. It's not peaceful. It's deadly. Here's something that you may or may not know. ISIS kills Muslims for not being the right type of Muslim. How about that? When's the last time we've been killing Christians because they were Presbyterian? Honestly. What they are doing is scriptural in their scripture. Not ours, but theirs. You can read it in the Quran or the Hadith, which is the teachings of Muhammad, in addition to the Quran, with the way he lived his life. Here's the peace that Islam brings. And this is probably the most key point. There will be peace when everyone becomes Muslim. That is the teaching of the Quran. That will be the time when there will be true peace on the planet, is when everyone is Muslim. Until that time, they teach there can be no peace. That's the reason they're fanatical. And who's trying to do this? There's hundreds and hundreds of groups, but the most relevant today, or the ones that you hear the most of, is ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Al-Qaeda, which we're very familiar with. The Muslim Brotherhood, which is something that we heard when the Egyptians had a revolt and overthrew their government, and that's been spreading. And the Muslim Brotherhood is an old, old thing that goes all the way back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, particularly very, very active during the World War I years, and then shortly thereafter when the mandate went in for the British and the French. And Boko Haram, which is the one in the Nigeria area that keeps kidnapping Christian girls and then converting them to Islam or killing them. Those are the more recognizable of the ones that we have today. How many of you have heard them, the president referred to ISIS as ISIL, ISIL? Okay. That stands for the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. And you guys know what the Levant is. We used to call the Holy Land, the coastal area of Lebanon and Israel, the Levant. And if you were to use the term Levant back with the Crusaders would all know exactly what you meant. But there's a couple of reasons why the president uses Levant. He doesn't want to use the word Syria because it's a foreign policy failure on his part when he had said that he'd drawn a line in the sand and said if the Syrians cross over this, that the United States would do this or that. So he really doesn't want to use the word Syria in his description of this group. But he also really doesn't want to use the word Israel. Because if you use Levant, it includes Israel and actually say the name. Please, I'm not attacking the President of the United States. But I am attacking those people that believe the same way he does. And they use vocabulary quite effectively in order to kind of get their message out and also to attack these sorts of things. One other thing that he said that Stan and I had talked about earlier, and that is the statement that slavery and Jim Crow laws were perpetuated by Christianity. And my whole family's from the South, and so those things, and if you go to my classroom, you've been there, what do I have hanging up those metal plaques on my wall? Not the Tennessee stuff, but those plaques above my whiteboard.
Oh, colored and white.
Yeah. I have a couple of plaques that my parents picked up for me and put in my classroom. One is a whites only swimming pool sign. And then the other one is a colored waiting room to go to the doctor's office. So when you talk about Jim Crow laws and slavery, and a lot of people like to say, well, it's the Christians, they justified slavery through Christianity. Well, some people did. But the fact of the matter is that if it wasn't for the Christians, slavery would have gone on for much, much longer. It was the Christians in the late 1700s and the early 1800s who attacked slavery. And they were the ones responsible for putting together the anti-slavery movement. And they're the ones through the Great Awakening had taken, not only just in the North, but also in the South, had awakened people to the fact of the evils of slavery and of Jim Crow laws and attacked them. So all of the anti-slavery movements in the United States were Christian-based and were formed in our Christian churches, period. So, you know, I get on my high horse a little bit when I hear people telling untruths about things that there is an obvious truth about. And if it wasn't for Christianity, then the slavery issue in the United States would have been a whole lot different. And as far as the Crusades go, there weren't any Crusaders cutting people's heads off because they weren't Christian. In fact, the Christian leaders of the time steered as far away from that as they possibly could. Got to realize something about the Crusades. At the time that these things went off, Europe was heavily armed with knights who were trained to cut people's heads off, that wore heavy armor and were looking for a fight. And they finally got one, and we unleashed Europe's finest soldiers on an area of land that we were winning back for Christianity. And our religious leaders and military and political leaders at the time restrained them from harming the Muslims and the Jews. And that's the truth. So, turn it back over to you, Stan.
Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.